WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're coming off a weekend when Donald Trump tweeted that Vladimir Putin genuinely believes Russia didn't hack our election, and that American intelligence agency officials who concluded that Russia did are political hacks. He was looking at you, former CIA Director John Brennan.
Well, first of all, he was referring to us as political hacks because he was trying to delegitimize the intelligence community assessment that was done. Jim Clapper, Jim Comey, and John Brennan did not write that assessment. It was written by the professional intelligence officers and law enforcement officers of this great country. Secondly, I feel very honored to be associated with Jim Clapper and Jim Comey in the same category. And considering the source of the criticism, I consider that criticism a badge of honor. And third, I found it particularly reprehensible that on Veterans Day, that Donald Trump would attack and impugn the integrity and the character of Jim Clapper, who served in uniform for 35 years, who responded to the call of his country to go to Vietnam, flew in over 70 combat support missions over Vietnam, and like Senator McCain, really did put his life at risk because of this country's national security.
Former CIA Director John Brennan on CNN's State of the Union yesterday. My next guest argues that the CIA has drifted further and further from its original purpose of using the art of intelligence gathering for national security and understanding the motivations of other countries into covert, often illegal operations like the post-9/11 torture program we learned about before we started seeing George W. Bush as all soft and cuddly. John Prados has written a history of the Central Intelligence Agency, which is his seventh book on the agency, called The Ghosts of Langley, Into the CIA's Heart of Darkness. John Prados is a senior fellow of the National Security Archive in Washington, D.C. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning.
And let's start with the news. What do you make of President Trump's continued undermining of U.S. intelligence agencies and officials?
That's a good question, and I'm glad you started with Mr. Brennan there. The intelligence chiefs had a notably difficult time starting now during the presidential campaign, not as this debate has, or this dispute is a better word, has continued, but had a difficult time getting anyone to pay attention to them when they started talking about the Russia problem. And my argument in The Ghost of Langley, actually, is precisely that the reason they have had such a difficult time getting people to pay attention to them is that they cut themselves off from accountability. And they have done this at the CIA through a process over many years of developing various arguments that they employ, sometimes in reverse, to get themselves out of trouble. For example, when the Senate was investigating CIA torture, they attempted to interview CIA officers. They were physically prevented from doing that by the general counsel of the intelligence agency. And then when the Senate report came out, CIA argued that the reason that the report was no good was because the investigators had not interviewed anyone. Well, if you go back to the Bay of Pigs operation, where the CIA's activity there was investigated by its own inspector general. That person conducted more than 125 interviews, and then the people who were trying to discredit that investigation of the Bay of Pigs argued that, well, there hadn't been enough interviews.
So you're saying that from JFK to George W. Bush, the CIA has been gradually discrediting its own credibility in the eyes of the American public and close observers like yourself?
Well, not just that. What I'm saying is wider than that. It's that figures that are historic or notable in the history of the agency, people that agency officers want to emulate, or else that they want to avoid acting like those people because those people got into really big trouble. These kinds of things create what would you say, behavioral standards maybe, and those standards help them to devise these kinds of arguments. Another example, in 1954, there was the famous World War II general Jimmy Doolittle was empowered by Dwight Eisenhower to conduct an investigation of how the CIA did covert operations. And the agency responded to him, but what they did was to compile work hour figures on how many hours various officials were consumed by answering Mr. General Doolittle's questions. If you move forward again to the Cuba operations in the early 1960s, you know, the Bay of Pigs was extensively investigated afterwards and whatnot. And meanwhile, John Kennedy was very interested in operations against Fidel Castro. And so when he's pressing for answers from the intelligence community about why haven't they made more progress with Castro, suddenly the intelligence guys are coming back saying, oh, well, we would be able to do more if we weren't spending all of our time answering these investigations. So the arguments come out of the situation at the moment, but the next time there's a crisis, you know, those arguments are on the table and they can be re-employed and re-engineered for the next specific situation.
By the way, Trump said the other day that these reports of 17 U.S. intelligence agencies all agreeing unanimously that Russia meddled in our election. He said, really, there are only four, the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, and I forget the fourth one. Who's right?
I would say both to some degree. It's certainly right that the intelligence product that was issued by the agencies early this year was one of the Director of National Intelligence plus the CIA and the FBI, and that content of the report depended to some degree on National Security Agency intercepts, so that brings in the NSA. So yes, those are four agencies, but those are four agencies that are specific and explicitly associated with the conclusions of the report. The Director of National Intelligence represents the United States intelligence community, which is the 17 agencies. So on another level, it's completely correct that a document issued by the DNI represents 17 agencies.
What are some
in
of
fact,
the... Uh-huh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
In fact, in the structure of the 2004 law that created the Director of National Intelligence post, it's specific that that official represents all of the intelligence agencies.
What are some of the more obscure ones that our listeners might not have heard of and scratched their own heads when they heard 17 U.S. intelligence agencies agree?
Well, if you tap any particular important government agency, it's got a member of the intelligence community that's part of the DNI. The State Department has the Bureau of Intelligence and Research. There is an intelligence directorate at the Department of Homeland Security. There are intelligence components of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, and the Coast Guard, plus there's a Defense Intelligence Agency. So already that's what, eight or nine more, besides the four that we mentioned before. The Secret Service is represented here. There are definitely a variety of agencies. The Department of Energy has an intelligence component. The Commerce Department has intelligence interests. And the Department of Justice also has a Deputy Assistant Secretary who handles intelligence matters. So we're already just about at 17.
On John Brennan, Obama CIA director, you write in your book that he is, quote, the ghost of the CIA's future, the Flying Dutchman. What does that mean?
In the story of the Flying Dutchman, the ghostly ship hoves into view and appears to be coming to you, and suddenly it disappears. And this is exactly the way that Mr. Brennan handled the CIA torture report. He said, when he was a White House official in the Obama administration, that he was very concerned about the torture reports, that he was cooperating in efforts to bring them out. He said, when he was on Capitol Hill at his nomination hearing for director of the CIA, that he believed that what had been done in the torture program was torture, that he was very disturbed by what was in the report, that he was interested in getting it out, pushing to get it out. And then when he was at Langley and in charge of the CIA, he did everything he could to resist the torture report coming out, starting from letting CIA subordinates conduct a massive operation to attempt to discredit the report, including hacking Senate computers and letting his general counsel recommend to the Justice Department that actually the Senate should be prosecuted for, should be criminally prosecuted for what it was doing in the torture report.
Are you saying that for all that Obama campaigned as a candidate for president against the Bush administration's practice of torture, that once Obama came in and appointed his own CIA director, even he was trying to downplay and cover up all the details of what was largely a CIA torture program?
Actually, that's a significant question, which remains to be answered. The actual position of Mr. Obama vis-a-vis the torture program and the CIA's efforts to keep quiet what happened on his watch is something that hasn't come out and may or may not in the future. But part of the episode of the CIA hacking Senate computers involved the disappearance from the Senate's database of documents that were already in there and that presumably were taken out. And when the question came up of what happened here, the Senate investigators were told that the material had been taken out on White House instructions for suspected executive privilege claims. No executive privilege claims were ever actually made, and no documents were ever restored to the Senate's data base. So how exactly the White House was involved in this and how that whole thing played out bears directly on Mr. Obama's attitude toward the agencies and the investigations.
And as you note, President Trump came into office talking about the use of torture in glowing terms and, as you write, seemed to call for tortures even more extreme than what the agency did in the past. The Formers, the name that you and agency insiders use for a group of former agency directors, say they're opposed to going back to the waterboarding or worse days. But what do you think? If President Trump calls for a new torture program, will the current CIA oblige?
I think that the current CIA is in a very delicate position here, and I make the argument at the end of The Ghosts of Langley that the push for the agency to operate in these mission centers, which it has reorganized itself into, have fundamentally altered the kind of dynamic of activity. The mission centers are all gung-ho, ready to go out and fight kind of thing. And that means that the intelligence that they need is what the agency likes to call in their jargon actionable intelligence. As opposed to trying to understand the world around us, they want specific information that's going to let them do what they want to do. And the push for actionable intelligence, that's what led to the torture. That's what led to the torture program. So on the one hand, the agency and the Formers, they're very much now aware of how bad it was, how damaging it was to them, not to the adversary, that they did this torture. On the other hand, now there's going to be renewed and even greater pressures for actionable intelligence. And somewhere in between those two horns of the dilemma, you know, is where the CIA is going to have to come out. So there's going to be continued pressure for these kinds of strong-arm methods, and there's going to be agency officers looking at the ghosts, you know, the ghosts of the psychologists, for example, who were just sued by some of the victims. You know, every time someone in the future is asked to do something like this, there's going to be that example there. And on the other hand, there's going to be the pressure to act and the pressure to get the job done.
Right.
So this is exactly where the agency is stuck.
My guest is CIA and intelligence expert John Prados, whose new book is The Ghosts of Langley, Into the CIA's Heart of Darkness. And we can take some phone calls for him at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll continue in a minute.
On the next On Being, neuroscientist and epigeneticist Rachel Yehuda.
You cannot run from your past, but maybe you would run farther if you carried your past with you as long as you can control it.
The science of how trauma and resilience cross generations. I'm Krista Tippett. Please join us. Tonight at 9 on 93.9 FM WNYC.
The Museum of the City of New York, located at 103rd and 5th, home to New York at its core, an interactive exhibition exploring New York City's past, present, and imagining its future, opens 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. WNYC is supported by Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, offering cancer treatment options including immunotherapy and GPS-guided surgery, and working to find new ways to customize cancer care. Memorial Sloan Kettering, more science, less fear. WNYC is a media partner of Brooklyn Public Library, presenting the inaugural Message from the Library lecture by David Grossman, Sunday, December 10th. Info at bklynlibrary.org.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with John Prados, author of The Ghosts of Langley, Into the CIA's Heart of Darkness. Let me play one more clip from former CIA Director John Brennan on CNN's State of the Union yesterday on Trump's waffling on whether Putin and Russia were responsible for meddling in the election last year.
But I think what by not confronting the issue directly and not acknowledging to Putin that we know that you were responsible for this, I think he's giving Putin a pass. And I think it demonstrates to Mr. Putin that Donald Trump can be played by foreign leaders who are going to appeal to his ego and to try to play upon his insecurities, which is very, very worrisome from a national security standpoint.
So, John, do you have any sense that Putin and Xi Jinping, for that matter, are playing Donald Trump. That is something for a CIA director, just past CIA director, to say.
Well, I agree with Mr. Brennan on this. And I think it's worse than what he's saying, actually. I think the Russians hold cards. They hold cards that are the pieces of evidence that prove that what we're talking about actually happened. And if the Russians were to lay down that evidence, it would tar Mr. Trump, overwhelmingly.
It's an interesting theory. And, of course, we don't quite have that proof, and it may or may not actually exist. But when you look at Trump over and over again, giving credibility, credence to Putin while dismissing the findings of our own intelligence agencies, it kind of looks like a hostage video.
Yes, that's exactly right. And one of the other things that bothers me about this is that the farther that Mr. Trump goes down this road of refusing to acknowledge and crediting the Russian side of these events, the more there's going to be a wall between the intelligence agencies and Mr. Trump. And I start out the book, Ghosts of Langley, talking about how intelligence officers are pressured by this new Trump administration. And I think that as this crisis, if that's the right word for it, unfolds, those pressures will be accentuated further.
John in Sandy Hook, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. I'd like to hear about Extraordinary Rendition. I remember that was a program where we sent prisoners to other countries to be tortured there. Is that still happening?
By our CIA, right?
Yes, this was the CIA program. As far as I know, it's not. And actually, this is a program that has a longer history than you would think. I mean, Extraordinary Rendition started even before the George W. Bush administration. It started under Clinton. Maybe it started earlier than that. And it started really out of Beirut in the 1980s, where the U.S. embassy was bombed, and where subsequent to that, Americans confronted this situation of not being able to act on an international level under American laws. So between the middle 80s and 1990, let's say, there were a sequence of court findings and legislation passed that authorized this kind of international activity. Then, in the Clinton administration, we did, in fact, reach out across the water and capture people who were wanted on various things. It started really with money, but terrorism became a main thing. And in fact, we were not hiding it at that time.
Right.
You could look at the terror.
And further, and I'm going to jump in only because we're going to run out of time in a minute. But between that kind of CIA activity and involvement in overthrowing leaders of other countries like Allende in Chile in the 70s and the Iran case in the 1950s, to your larger point in the book about the CIA getting away from its original mission of just gathering intelligence so our leaders could make smart, informed decisions, do you see them going back to that original mission anytime soon?
We have a real problem, and that is that the world has evolved in a way that is throwing up new possibilities for activity by actors who are not states. And in the non-state actor arena, the possibilities for understanding and for doing the kinds of intelligence analysis that used to be the CIA's superlative product are more complex. In particular, given the evolution of ecological and other challenges to the globe, which are going to have the effect of pushing people to do various kinds of activity, some of which is going to be inimical to national interests of states like the United States.
And
so we are caught between the need to try and understand these dynamics and forces and the desire to act against the putative enemy.
John Prados's new book,
We Are Stuck.
We Are Stuck with No More Time, but very interesting from John Prados, author now of The Ghosts of Langley, Into the CIA's Heart of Darkness. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.